Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, Sheil Kapadia of The Ringer joins me to break down the 3-0 Philadelphia Eagles and to abandon take, to give away some of the opinions we had before the season and to say how wrong we were. A couple from me, a couple from Sheil. But first, before we start today's show, I want to plug a podcast, which is by, of all people, ESPN and Enscape contributor, Dominique Foxworth, who has a new podcast every Tuesday and Thursday. Dominique is bringing you his unique perspectives on football with the personalities surrounding it. So check out the Dominique Foxworth Show and listen wherever you get your podcast. All right, joining me now here on the Bill Barnwell Show, completing the home and home after I made my appearance on his podcast, which is called
The Scramble.
The Scramble at The Ringer. It is my friend, former colleague, a man who has been at ESPN, been at The Athletic, now at The Ringer, the excellent Sheil Kapadia. Sheil, what's up?
It's good to be here. I don't think I've ever had a pod home and home like this before. So, you know, it's not quite like, you know, a back-to-back in the NBA, but I'm feeling pretty good about it. I feel very professional.
Well, I mean, to be fair, not many people were welcomed on Birds with Friends over the years.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You're right about that.
A energy that I think very few people could hope to match.
Absolutely. But, yeah, that's fair. That might have been trouble for the guests there. So you're right. I haven't had as many opportunities.
Yes. But now, not only you're hosting multiple shows on The Ringer, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. We've got the Ringer's Philly special with me and Ben Solak. We've got me and Ben Solak on Monday nights on the Ringer NFL show with a show called Extra Point Taken. And then I've got a Thursday show called The Scramble with me and a various guest like yourself. So there you go. I think I got all the plugs out of the way in like the first 2 minutes. That might be a new record.
Real investment in Solak here, I feel like.
That's right.
Really, really extended Solak very quickly into the your time with The Ringer. Tied your ship to Solak. Ben is great, so I have no doubts there, but it's a dangerous game to play.
Well, I talked to him, as I told him, I talked to him more than I talked to my family at this point with all those shows. He made he made some comment where I thought he was asking if he could email me, which wasn't what he was asking. But I was like, no, you may not. I talked to you plenty where you don't need to be communicating with me through another means. So, yeah, that's where we're at with our relationship.
That's incredible. What a already feel like you're years into that relationship based on that conversation. We are going to get to a couple things today. You, of course, are in the Philadelphia area. Pay close attention to the Eagles. Like you said, you have a Philadelphia-focused podcast. So we're going to talk Eagles after their 3-0 start. And then later on, we're going to talk about some of the things we may have felt before the season that we're just getting rid of 3 weeks into the year. We did a segment on your show that was basically pick a take, where you gave me two, frankly, infuriatingly close choices, and I had to pick one of them. Today, we are going back and forth and just giving away takes that we felt were confident before the season and now after 3 weeks seem foolish. So we're abandoning ship on those. But first, let's start with a team that, I mean, I don't know how you felt about them heading into the year, but certainly exceeding my expectations through the first 3 weeks of the season, the 3-0 Philadelphia Eagles, one of two teams in the NFL to start 3-0 along the Miami Dolphins. And I guess we'll start there, Sheil. In terms of the performance, how surprised are you to see the Eagles playing as well as they have through the first 3 weeks of the season?
Yeah, they've definitely surpassed my expectations. I mean, I had them as a really good team, 11-6, but I kind of had that with the context of, well, they have a really easy schedule. You know, they'll win some close games. They've got good depth. So I felt like they could withstand some injuries that maybe other teams might not be able to withstand. But the way they've done it, their ceiling is absolutely higher than I expected. You know, just the way Jalen Hurts has played so far, specifically the way he played in that Monday night game a couple of weeks ago, that was a version of Jalen Hurts that I was like, oh, I didn't know that, you know, this guy existed. As much as I've been asked about Hurts over the last 2 years, that's always been in the back of my head. Like, what is the best version of this guy actually look like? And if he's capable of playing at that level, even if it's not every week, then they really have a chance to make some noise in the playoffs. So I had him 11-6, but I think losing in the first or second round of the playoffs, where now it certainly seems like you're not, you're not crazy to think that they could make a deep playoff run and potentially get to the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. I mean, that is the upside they have so far this year through three games, where I think a lot of people, myself included, would put them maybe in a group with the Bills, maybe with the Dolphins, depending on how you feel about Miami, but among the absolute best teams in football, full stop. In terms of this roster, we talked about Jalen Hurts a little bit. I'm sure we're going to talk more about him, but on the whole, does the offense playing really well surprise you more, or does the defense playing as well as it has over the first 3 weeks surprise you more relative to your expectations heading into the season?
It's definitely the defense. I mean, I didn't have a lot of faith in this defense. I thought this defense stunk last year. You know, they finished 25th in DVOA, I think it was. And if you look back, like as far back as DVOA goes, that was the third worst defense like the Eagles have had during that era of 30 to 40 years. And and really that's what it looked like when you watched it. And that was with beating up on some horrible quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got to face Garrett Gilbert and Jake Fromm. Like there were four or five quarterbacks they played last year who are either out of the league or backups this year. And so anytime they faced even a competent quarterback, let alone a good quarterback, I mean, the good quarterbacks picked him apart. And then like someone like a Derek Carr, who you would say, all right, you know, solid, competent quarterback. Mm-hmm. I think he completed 90% of his passes against them. And so they were just really vanilla. They didn't have a plan B. They played a lot of zone. They played a lot of off coverage. They weren't aggressive. They prioritized stopping explosive plays over everything else, which they did a good job of stopping explosive plays, but teams weren't really bothered by it. I mean, I was making the joke every week that like quarterbacks basically didn't have to take a shower after they faced the Eagles. I mean, they weren't even breaking a sweat in some of those games. They felt no pressure. And so I will give their defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon, credit, and I will give the GM, Howie Roseman, credit, because it's a defensive roster that should be able to produce a top 10 unit. Mm-hmm. But going into the season, I was very skeptical that it would. And so far, it's been very good.
Yeah. I mean, to your point about quarterbacks not needing to take a shower a year ago, that has changed here in 2022. 11 sacks from the front four so far this season. Only 26th in pressure rate. That kind of surprised me, according to Stats and Info. But they're 8th in sack rate and number 1 in the NFL in QBR when they do get pressure, where quarterbacks are 9 of 22 for negative 33 yards net, which is a little negative dramatic.
33, wow.
Negative 33 net, 11th in the league in QBR when they don't get pressure, which I think speaks to the upgrades they've made in terms of coverage, both in personnel and in terms of what that personnel lets them accomplish in the secondary.
Yeah, their secondary has also been very good. I mean, you mentioned it. I mean, the way they're built, it's defensive line, pass rush, invest some more. Let's go like 7 or 8 deep with either high draft picks or guys we're paying a lot of money to. Yep. That's always sort of, that's been their philosophy now for probably 20, 22, 23 years. And so that's no surprise. The corners have been outstanding. Like Darius Slay was really good last year. I thought he played at an all-pro level, but I think he's 29 or 30. And so at that age with corners, you know, it's a volatile position. You sure could be great 1 year, and then the next year, you're not so good. And so that was a question I had coming into the season, but he's played very well. And then, man, James Bradbury just fell into their laps. Like, I don't know if they had a plan B at corner or not, or if they were just going to go with one of the young guys. But just this past week, just watching the film against the Commanders, like they tried to test him with two double moves, and it was just like beautifully covered where he just did not fall forward at all. One of them led to a sack. And so Bradbury looks really good. He looks like what you're expecting when you sign a veteran who's played a lot, who's not really old quite yet. And he was someone who, you know, was a shrewd move to kind of get him when they did and make sure they upgrade that second corner spot. And then their slot corner, Avante Maddox, has been outstanding. Like I haven't watched every slot corner in the NFL this year, but I would be hard pressed to think that there's somebody playing better than him right now. So I think their corners are playing pretty much as well as I can remember an Eagles group of corners playing in a really, really long time.
Do you think that'll be a niche one day? Do you think they'll just be the slot corner Twitter where it's just one guy who watches every single slot corner every week?
Yeah, I think that's right. Like Brandon Thorne, if I need like an offensive line assessment, I'm like, all right, I need to go see what Brandon Thorne said. He's absolutely going to have a much better opinion than I ever could, even if I was grinding all the film. So yeah, I do. There's like a niche for everything, but maybe that's a good niche to have. It's fun watching slot corners.
It is. And they're an incredibly valuable part of the roster. I think about Patrick Robinson kind of showing up for the Eagles during that Super Bowl season. He was so good for a guy they got pretty much for nothing heading into that season. You mentioned Roseman, and I think he's such a weird sort of person in the NFL in terms of his career, because I don't know. I can't think of anybody who's had higher highs and lower lows over a longer period of time in one single job than Howie Roseman has over the past 15 years. I know you were gone for part of that covering the Seahawks, but you've covered this team off and on for a large part of Roseman's tenure. I mean, is it weird that Eagles fans or people around the NFL can simultaneously go from thinking Roseman is a genius to a total fraud who needs to be fired to being a genius again in the course of like a 4-year window?
Yeah, you're right. It is weird. I mean, I think the thing with Howie Roseman, it's never been so much about like his roster building or his decision making. Like, he's not the one getting dunked on for, oh my gosh, how could you make this trade? Or what were you thinking about how you use these resources? Like, that's what a lot of the conversation is about, how if GMs are good or bad or their draft record. I mean, I think the issues he's had have been more about, you know, like leadership and relationships with people in the building. And that's the part of GMing that doesn't get talked about enough, probably. You know, it's like that person's job, not in every organization, but certainly for the Eagles and for some other teams, like that person's job is to make sure that, you know, everything's aligned between ownership and the coaching staff and the analytics department and the scouting staff. Like, there's a lot of egos in an NFL building, and there's a lot of people who don't see the same thing exactly the same, whether it's a roster move or a player or a draft pick. And so I think when he's had issues, it's been more related to that stuff. And hey, everyone's not aligned and people are butting heads. And are you doing enough to sort of alleviate those things and massage those relationships? Or are you kind of adding on to it? And a lot of it is just sort of the structure, I think, of the Eagles organization. You know, it's the ownership and, you know, Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman are the two decision makers. And it's been that way for a long time, aside from a year or two there with Chip Kelly. And so that's different than a lot of organizations where it doesn't feel like the GM is so aligned with the owner. And so that's what I think leads to a lot of those sort of mixed feelings. But man, you know, the roster he's put together, if you just like watching the film of their game against the Commanders, I just said, you know, that was really like a Howie Roseman game, because they won that game because they had players just crushing their one-on-one matchups. AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, the Eagles' defensive line against Washington's offensive line. Like, that wasn't a game where you're like, wow, schematic brilliance. It was sort of like, you know, throw the ball up to these awesome wide receivers, or hey, rush with four and look, the center's on his back and the right tackle's getting smoked and you just got another sack. So he's absolutely put together a fantastic roster this season. And that's pretty remarkable given where this roster was just, you know, 2 years ago after that 2020 season.
I mean, they were being accused of tanking on national television with a broken roster, and now they have one of the best rosters in football. And it's so fascinating to me that I think, you know, the perception changes so dramatically over the course of a couple years about a guy who, I mean, like, I think Howie Roseman did a good job the past couple years. I think he made some bad decisions during the sort of tail end of the Wentz era. Some of the moves he made didn't work out necessarily. Some of the deals didn't pan out the way he would have hoped. But, like, I don't think he's a totally different person now than the guy he was 2 years ago.
No, yeah, no, I would say, like, he's absolutely not. He's, you know, I think he's the same guy. You know, he's made, and he's also, I do think his strength is sort of this phase, you know, like the rebuilding, like getting off of bad contracts and shoot, this roster's a mess. You know, we got to get ourselves some cap space and let's not lock ourselves in to bad contracts. Like, all those things he's really good at. And then, you know, just being opportunistic with stuff like the AJ Brown trade. You know, it's, hey, you're not going to pay him. Yes, absolutely. We will take that guy. He's a difference maker. So I don't know. I feel like my new, like, working theory is just that most GMs are pretty much the same. We're not separated by that much. You know, there are some who you obviously point to and are like, oh my gosh, they're making ridiculous decisions. You know, there's probably like, I don't know, what, five of those in a given year where you're just like, this team's probably not going to have any chance. And then I think most of the rest of them are pretty much, you know, in kind of the same boat. I don't know if that's right or not, but that's sort of how I look at it more and more, I feel like, these days.
I don't disagree with you whatsoever. And I think, you know, with Roseman, he's probably not as good as he looks at his absolute peak, and he's probably not as bad as he looks when it feels like everybody is calling for him to be fired, which is true of pretty much all those GMs that you were alluding to. What I find interesting about the Commanders game is it felt like a real difference to me from the Eagles offense of a year ago, because the running game did absolutely nothing. It was the second worst rushing performance of the entire season for any team by EPA per play.
Wow.
The Eagles running the ball last week against the Commanders, and yet it didn't matter. The offense got 24 points before halftime, didn't score after halftime, in part because the running game was not working very well, but they still had enough points to comfortably win that football game. And I think it really contrasted to me with what we saw from them in the playoffs last year. They played the Bucs, who have a very good run defense, and the Bucs stifled their rushing attack, and the Eagles didn't really have a plan B on offense for most of that game. They struggled to throw the ball when they were in third and long, and struggled to throw the ball in passing situations. And now that feels like they don't have to be able to run the ball effectively. They can still throw the ball in those situations, and that's a big leap forward for that team. It gives them another way for them to win football games that I don't think was there even during most of the 2021 season.
Yeah, they're, you know, the first half of last season, they were among the league leaders or top eight or whatever in kind of just pass rate in neutral situations. And then, like you mentioned, they totally changed how they played. That wasn't working for them. And they were one of the most run heavy teams in the final 8 or 9 weeks of the season. And now they absolutely are more of a pass first team. I mean, you watch these games and they come out throwing the football, trying to gain a lead. And, you know, it's not as simple as, hey, you got AJ Brown, but man, that makes a big difference. I mean, just look at it in some of these high leverage situations. Like, there is a luxury in being like, all right, it's third and goal. Our first two plays didn't work. Mm-hmm. Hey, what if we just throw a slant to that guy on the outside who's really good? And it sounds like silly, but they've done that multiple times this season on a third down. Or, man, we just had a three and out. What do we go with? Hey, let's throw a little screen to AJ Brown. He'll knock someone on their back and pick up like 8 yards, and the crowd will be real hype, and the team, his teammates will be really hyped. Like, that absolutely has been a strength of theirs, which is just don't overthink it sometimes. Like, you got this guy for a reason. And so that's been part of it. It's opened up the middle of the field for them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot's been talked and written about how Jalen Hurts did not really use the middle of the field last year. Well, that looks different this year with AJ Brown. And so, I think organizationally, from ownership on down, they've believed for over 20, 25 years that you have to be a good passing team to basically have any kind of sustained success. And so I suspected that this year they would be like, yeah, we want to do what we need to do to win games. But also, if we're going to find out whether Jalen Hurts is the guy, we sort of need to find out if he can throw the football effectively and consistently with the weapons that we have around him and with a great offensive line. And so, hey, it's only three games. We'll see once they face some better defenses, if they're still able to do that. But you're 100% right about the approach and what it's been so far.
Yeah, and to your point about the middle of the field, Jalen Hurts, 23rd in QBR on passes over the middle of the field between the numbers, this year third best in football after being 23rd a year ago, averaging 10.6 yards per attempt. And of course, AJ Brown plays a big role in that. And I think, you know, like, the Eagles have a way of sort of making things simpler a lot of the times. Like, I think when you look at the AJ Brown trade, It makes so much sense. Number one, they needed the weapon over the middle of the field, a physical guy who could win on third down, win on contested catches. Devontae Smith might be able to do that stuff, but he wasn't, you know, his size makes that a more difficult problem to pull off. And the Titans were not playing AJ Brown enough. Even when he was on the field, even when he was healthy and playing, he was playing 72, 73% of the snaps. He's at 85% now through 3 weeks. He's running more routes per game than he has during his time with Tennessee. And I know that, hey, play that really good wide receiver more often seems like a really dumb and not really insightful thing, but that's kind of what the Eagles are doing, and it's working.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, just watching them in training camp, it was like, okay, there's no doubt that they're just going to be feeding this guy, you know, a lot. And he's kind of the focal point of the offense. That was evident at practices. And then once the first game started, it was like, okay, yep, that's carrying over to the game. So you're right about simplifying stuff. I mean, even this last game, like if you watch it, you wouldn't, mm-hmm. you know, if you watch it closely, it's not like Jalen Hurts had this incredible elite quarterbacking performance. And that sounds crazy to say, because he threw for 340 yards and three touchdowns and they dominated the game. But a lot of it was his best trait in that game was, I'm going to give our really good players opportunities to make plays, and I'm going to be aggressive and like really focused and direct in doing that. And so a lot of times he was just throwing the ball up. It's a one-on-one on the outside. It's single high coverage. Hey, Devontae Smith is really good and AJ Brown's really good. I'm going to give them chances. And then it was just like, you know, four or five drives in a row where they're making unbelievable plays. So sometimes you don't have to overthink it. Like, I think that's true with coaching. It's like, it doesn't always have to be about the scheme you drew up on Tuesday while the coaches were meeting during the players off day. It doesn't always have to be the scheme that's being, you know, shared on social media by, you know, the everyone who's following film, like, oh my, look at what they did with this motion, or, you know, look at what they did with this route concept. Like, especially in the NFL, if your wide receivers are better than the other team's cornerbacks, then go ahead and spam that and spam that and spam that some more until it doesn't work. And, you know, their willingness to do that has really stood out through the first 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, you mentioned that the schedule is going to get harder. And so I guess my final question for you, when it comes to the Eagles and when it comes to this offense, is there a defense that you think might give them trouble? Like, is there, whether it's a concept, whether it's a personnel grouping, whether it's just a dude who you think is just the mismatch of all mismatches for this defense, like, who is going to give this offense problems that we haven't seen so far this season?
Yeah, it's, you know, because of what I just said, it's almost like, well, who are the most talented defenses, right? Because if you can just have someone who can match up with those guys on the outside, then all of a sudden you're taking away a lot of what the Eagles are able to do. So if they were to like face the Bucs again, you know, that's probably going to be a tough matchup. The Bucs are really good on defense. They're going to be a tough matchup for anybody. And so they would be a tough matchup for them. But the schedule thing is tough because they've got the third easiest schedule the rest of the way per Football Outsiders, and they're 3-0. And I think their over under for wins now is all the way up to 12.5. Wow. So like, they're going to be favored in maybe every game, almost every game. I mean, they've got the Packers at home, so we'll see where the two teams are there. They could be favored in that game. They might not be, but just in terms of defenses, honestly, I think this weekend's going to be fun against the Jaguars. I mean, the Jaguars defense, like, we'll see how good it is, but they've got like a bunch of athletes. Yep. And they've got size and speed and young guys. And up front, you know, they run a lot of stunts and games. And, you know, Josh Allen has been playing great for them. And Devin Lloyd has been playing great for them. And, you know, their defensive coordinator, Mike Caldwell, was on staff with Tampa Bay during that playoff game last year with Todd Bowles, where the Eagles offense looked terrible. And so it goes to kind of what we were just talking about. Yes, the Eagles offense is different now. They've got A.J. Brown. They're operating differently, but how different is it? And so I think we'll find that out this weekend. You know, they faced some different approaches. Like the Lions in week one came out and said, we're going to blitz you, we're going to play man coverage, we're going to be in your face. And like, it didn't work that well. But in week two, the Vikings came out and were just like, yeah, we're going to play two deep split safety zone. And that I felt like, I don't think you can play them like that. Right, with the weapons they have and, you know, how Hurts has matured, I think you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So I do think you want to force the action a little bit. Like, there are times where their offense looks a little chaotic when some of those blitzes come their way. It's not always reflected in the numbers because Hurts can make plays with his legs. But I think that's what you'll see with the Jaguars, where they're going to come out and they're not going to sort of play passively, conservatively. They're going to try to force things to happen. And it wouldn't shock me if they, you know, if they gave the Eagles offense some trouble.
Absolutely. Now, I lied. I have one more Eagles question, and then we'll move on to abandon ship on takes. But last week, the Eagles traveled to Washington for a reunion with Carson Wentz. It felt like, I don't know what percentage you'd put on it, but a significant percentage of Eagles fans were in the crowd and did not express many positive thoughts towards their former starting quarterback. This week, they got a home game against Doug Peterson, the former Eagles head coach who led them to a Super Bowl only several years ago. What kind of reaction do you think Peterson will get from Eagles fans?
Oh, he'll get rousing ovations. Everybody, the fans love Doug Peterson. Honestly, inside the building, there were people who thought probably that Doug Peterson deserved to get fired and wasn't doing a good job. But even those people would probably admit that, like, well, we're going to kind of miss having him around. Like, he's a fun head coach. You know what I mean? Like, he was just well-liked inside the building. And so I think he'll get there's a statue of the guy outside outside the stadium. He brought them their only Super Bowl. He brought them a lot of great memories. I mean, I was thinking Doug Peterson's probably, I would imagine he would be, I don't know if like chip on the shoulder is the right word, but he's probably looking at it like, I won a Super Bowl. I got the team to the playoffs 2 years after that. Mm-hmm. And now they got AJ Brown and Devontae Smith. Yeah, you know what? I could have coached some pretty good offense if I would have had those guys. And so I think a lot of this stuff has aged well in Doug Peterson's favor, even the Carson Wentz stuff, that was a big reason why he got fired, because Wentz was terrible that year and Wentz hasn't been very good since then. So was it coaching or was it Carson Wentz? Now, having said that, the team sucked in 2020, yes, and the offense looked stale, and he looked like he was out of ideas on some front. So I'm not, meaning to say that he was doing a great job, but no, I think he'll get a very warm reception from the fans and from the players who are still on the team who played under him.
Only on the Bill Barnwell Show can you find out that coaching AJ Brown better than coaching JJ Arcega-Whiteside if you need a number one receiver. That's true. And obviously I think Peterson kind of got a bad rap at the end. Certainly his work in taking a team that was kind of a mess when he took it over after the Chip Kelly year and got them to a Super Bowl in two seasons, I think one of the best coaching jobs we saw in football over the past decade. And I know what happened next wasn't pretty, but I think we're seeing with the Jaguars, like, just getting a competent coach in there has really turned that organization around. They look really promising. That's going to be a fun one this weekend in Philly. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better with the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country. There is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a Jets Pizza location near you. Again, try Jets Signature 8-Corner Pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, SAVE. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay. So I alluded to the other segment of this show, and we have to write a lot for the season. I know you're doing more podcasting now, and you're great at that, but you're also one of the best writers about the NFL out there, and you have to give a lot of opinions, you give a lot of thoughts, you cover the entire league and do it really well. And so there's only a few of us out there who have to really pay attention to the entire NFL. And so I wanted to talk with you about the ideas, the opinions, the takes we had in August that we are now just abandoning after watching the first few weeks of the NFL season. So I will let you go first if you would like. I'm happy to go first as well. But I have a couple, and I want to hear what you have to say about the takes that you are abandoning after the first 3 weeks of the NFL season.
Sure. Yeah, I can start. I had the Chargers winning the AFC West and making the AFC championship. And I feel like I need to explain this one, because if you make a prediction like that and a team gets decimated by injuries, listen, not everyone's going to let you off the hook, but reasonable people will, right? They understand that there's going to be luck with injuries. That's not my issue with the Chargers. Like, I'm so annoyed by the Chargers and the way they've approached this season, injuries aside. And we know the injuries are probably going to be the factor why they're not going to be, great the rest of the way. But man, just watching that week two game after a year plus of Brandon Staley sort of, you know, being this guy, hey, we want our team to play with an aggressive mindset, and that's why I'm going for it on fourth down. Like, I know that didn't make sense to everybody. That made sense to me. I was like, yes, explain it. You're doing a good job. Communicate it with the public. He was releasing those videos every week from his office. I'm like, this is good. Listen, you're not going to win everyone over, but I think your players will understand. And I do think there's something to that, that when an offense, like, I mean, we just talked about the Jaguars, like watch the Jaguars on fourth down. Like, they're not even thinking about coming off the field. They're okay, what's the play call? We know we're going for it here. It's an obvious go situation. And so that's what I thought we were getting with Staley. And then he just totally reversed course in that in week two. And maybe it's not going to last all season, but he got really conservative in that game. He's kicking field goals. He's punting on fourth and one from midfield. I mean, there were three different opportunities in that game. So that annoyed me a little bit. And then, you know, this last week, Justin Herbert with time winding down in the fourth quarter, and you're down four touchdowns and the guy's rib cartilage, you know, he is in pain. There's close-ups of his face in the second quarter and he's in pain and you leave him in the game. And then you say, well, you know, he wanted to be out there with his teammates. Yeah, guess what? Every player wants to do that. These guys are like, not like, they're just like, they feel like they can play through anything. Mm-hmm. And your job as the head coach is to take the most important guy in the franchise and say, listen, Justin, I get it, but like, we're taking this out of your hands. Go have a seat. It's a long season. We have a lot we want to accomplish. Instead, he's out there on dropping back 14 more times on their final drive with a rib injury. And so I just have questions about sort of the leadership there, the decision-making there, injuries aside. I mean, the injuries are a huge factor, like I said, but that if I would have known that some of this sort of just managing the team, managing the players type stuff was going to surface, there's no way I would have picked them to be that good. Sorry, I feel like I just ranted for like 10 minutes. But
No, you had to get that out, and I appreciate
it. I had to get it out.
I have two things to say. Number one, there are teams where if they got banged up with injuries, I would be like, you know what? You couldn't have seen that happening. And I'm willing to believe that that was just an unlucky year. But this is the Chargers we're talking about. It feels like every single year the Chargers have at least one or two of their young superstars mysteriously suffer an injury in week two, and then he doesn't return until week 16. Usually it's Derwin James. This year it's Joey Bosa. It's Rashawn Slater's out for the year. It's Justin Herbert being mishandled, and it's J.C. Jackson being mishandled, who had ankle surgery before the season, comes in week two, plays 100% of the snaps against the Chiefs, and then misses the week three game against the Jaguars with apparently an ankle injury. So major issues there. And I think the other part of it, and this reminds me a little bit of Peterson, given how he acted on fourth downs during his time in Philadelphia. I felt like he, not to maybe the same extent or not maybe on such a national stage, but he was a guy where during that Super Bowl season, he was aggressive on fourth down and lauded for it, with the most famous play, of course, being Philly Special at the end of the first half against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. But in the subsequent years, he was not as aggressive on fourth down. There were moments where I think there were questions about, hey, why is this guy not going for this now when he went for it a couple years ago in the same situation? And I think when it comes to Staley and keeping Peterson in mind, I wonder, are we maybe too quick to like anoint guys as like these analytics friendly fourth down guys, and maybe that fluctuates more significantly from year to year or roster to roster than we sort of think once they've proven themselves?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to just like every coach basically takes into account, what do I think of my offense and what do I think of my defense? And, you know, even like John Harbaugh, the year he was getting all the credit, like he was pretty honest that, man, our defense was having a real tough time in the beginning of the season. And that's why I was so aggressive. And I think that played into it with Staley for sure. But man, you still have like Justin Herbert, and these weren't, you know, to me, like, sure, if you don't want to go for it, you know, deep in like in your own territory, but those against the Chiefs, those decisions, and especially, I mean, he really felt like he was all in with it. You know, he was really outside the box with his thinking as it compares to other coaches. But you're right. I think we probably discount how much they kind of take into account. Well, what do I think of my team right now? Do I like my defense? Do I not like my defense? That plays into it for sure quite a bit.
Absolutely. And nothing wrong with that. Like, I think it's reasonable to consider your personnel and what you're good at. But anything, the Chargers have better defense this year than they did a year ago. I don't know. We will see what happens, I guess, in the weeks to come. I mentioned John Harbaugh. I'll go with the Ravens, where I looked at their offseason moves. I looked at trading Marquise Brown, not really adding a replacement, using a first-round pick on Tyler Linderbaum, adding a couple of tight ends in the draft. To me, what that told me about this offense was that they were going to be more of a run-heavy offense than they were in 2021. They tried to be more balanced in 2021, and I felt like it was for the worse. Lamar Jackson didn't play his best football. The rushing game wasn't as efficient, and they had been much better in 2019 and 2020 as one of the league's most run-heavy offenses, especially in neutral situations. So here comes 2022. We are 3 weeks in. Lamar Jackson looks like an MVP candidate, throwing and running the football. And the Ravens have the sixth highest early down pass rate per Ben Baldwin of The Athletic and his website, rbsdm.com. So I'm throwing out that prior and the idea that the Ravens were going to be a more run-heavy offense, because I think we've seen over the first 3 weeks of the year that they can be a very effective passing attack with Lamar Jackson throwing at a rate not just league average like it was a year ago, but well above league average on early downs in neutral situations.
Yeah, I was right there with you. I mean, I was struggling to come up with a reason why the Ravens offense was going to be different than it's been, or not different, but better than it's been over the last couple of years. When you looked at the supporting cast that Lamar Jackson was playing with, I was just like, I don't know. You know, they have the same offensive coordinator. Their wide receivers aren't as good. Their offensive line has questions. Like, I think I had them around 12th or something when I just did my preseason projections of the offenses, and they've been way better than that. I mean, that Dolphins game, I thought that was as good as he's ever looked, specifically as a passer. And this is a guy who had an MVP season, so I don't want to like discount what he's put out there on film, but I mean, he was just fantastic in that game. And, you know, I don't know that there's a player asked to do more for their offense than Lamar Jackson. He's got 12 offensive touchdowns. That's more than 30 teams in the NFL. The only exceptions are the Ravens, who he plays for. He's accounted for all 12 of their offensive touchdowns, either running or passing. And then the other team with 12 is the Detroit Lions. So he's been fantastic this year with so much at stake, not only for that team, but with his contract kind of hanging over everything. So I was with you. That has certainly been a surprise to me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Do you have one more take that you're willing to give up and say, I am no longer endorsing this opinion?
Yeah, I thought the Dolphins had a chance to be a real train wreck this season.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I didn't know about Mike McDaniel. Like, I didn't have a strong opinion that, hey, he's going to be great or he's going to stink. But I just thought, okay, everyone's assuming, like, usually when a wide receiver goes away from Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, he's not going to a better situation. And then I looked at it, first time head coach, wild ownership situation where the guy's just meeting people on boats, trying to get new quarterbacks every year and, you know, can't even tamper right. And so I was just like, man, that thing could really blow up. And so I don't know that the Dolphins are, you know, going to win a Super Bowl. I think they'll come back to down to earth a little bit, but just what I've seen from McDaniel so far, I have really liked it. You know, just his focus on, hey, we're going to get our playmakers the ball over and over and over again. Like, that sounds so simple and, oh, it's easy, but like sometimes it's not that easy. I mean, go look at the Raiders and Davante Adams right now. Like, it can be hard to integrate even a great player. And so the way he's done that, the offensive scheme, like, you really just look at if coaching is putting your players in the best position to succeed. And if you can do that with the quarterback, especially, you might have a special talent. I think it's been pretty apparent that he's been doing that with Tua Tagovailoa through 3 weeks. I mean, they're first in the NFL right now in offensive EPA per drive. And so I had questions about their offensive line. I thought, okay, fine. You got Tyreek Hill. How are you going to scheme around that offensive line? Well, they found ways to do that also. I think his game management in that Ravens game specifically specifically has been very good. And so we'll see. We just talked about how our opinions on coaches can change year to year or within a year. So I'm not saying the guy is going to go into the Hall of Fame, but I think I had the Patriots at 9-8 and the Dolphins at 8-9. I thought they were similar teams, but I kind of like the Patriots a little bit better. I would like to probably reverse that after three games. The early returns for the Dolphins have been pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if they're not, you know, undefeated the rest of the way, I think they've done enough to prove they have a higher ceiling, especially on offense, than I think we expected heading into the season. I feel the same way. And frankly, they could be even better. I mean, they've obviously they can't win more than 100% of their games, but they've dropped, I think, 2-3 pick sixes on the defensive side of the ball. They certainly dropped one on that weird Josh Allen play at the end of the first half on that fake spike that he bobbled. And it was like 2019 Josh Allen came back to us for a second, and Lamar almost threw a pick six at the end of week two. So they could be even more productive and even more dominating than they've been so far this season. So yeah, I think Mike McDaniel deserves a lot of credit. I think the offense looks great, and I think they are well positioned to be a legit contender in the AFC.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One team, I'll finish up here, that I thought was going to be, if not a Super Bowl contender, at least a legitimate contender in the AFC, that I'm getting concerned about. This one might be one I'm not willing to give up on the Colts altogether, but I am very concerned about the offensive line, because for years, the thing, if you didn't know anything about football, if you just wanted to be a person on a talk show talking about the Colts, the one thing you could say is, well, they have a great offensive line. That is no longer the case. This line is a mess. The Chiefs beat them up in that game on Sunday. Danny Pinter, their right guard, has been one of the worst linemen in football through 3 weeks. There were three plays in that game. I just went back and watched it this afternoon. Three plays where it was a totally unblocked defender rushing up the A-gap, which is like the first rule of pass protection is don't let someone rush up the A-gap. Another play where there was a totally unblocked rusher running up the B-gap, which is the second rule of pass protection. Don't let someone run up the B-gap totally untouched. And that's not about being physical. It's not about having great players. That's just about communication. That's about knowing how to sort stuff out on the fly. And seeing that happen with Ryan Kelly, who's supposed to be one of the best centers in football, and Matt Ryan, who is a veteran quarterback who has seen just about everything a pass rush can show to a quarterback over the course of his career, really, really worries me. I think Jonathan Taylor is playing well, but not great. And Ryan, I mean, I'm not ready to cut bait on Ryan. I don't think he's lost necessarily, but man, I mean, his deep throw so far this year, it just does not look like there's much zip on his passes. So this could be a team where I think all they can really do is dink and dunk and run the ball well, but not as well as they did a year ago. And that, I don't know if they have the defense to hold up their end of the bargain and be a 10-win team, which is kind of where I had them heading into the season.
Yeah, I had them at 10-7. I was kind of concerned about some stuff, but I was like, well, the division stinks. I think they had one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. It's like, well, Frank Reich has gotten at least, you know, mediocre to above average offenses from all these different quarterbacks. I have to say, like, that team stinks right now. Like, that's one of the worst teams in the NFL. Yeah, I mean, right. Forget statistically, like, just watching them over the first 3 weeks, it's everything you said. And listen, some of it could have been easily predicted. I mean, they went into the season with probably the worst left tackle situation in the NFL. They went into the season with one of the worst wide receiver situations in the NFL. Matt Ryan is 37 years old. And like, that game that they, that won on Sunday last week against the Chiefs, the amount of things that needed to go their way just to barely win that game at the last second. I mean, botched fake field goals, missed field goals, missed extra points, or a mysterious Chris Jones penalty there, a Travis Kelce drop touchdown. I mean, there were so many things in that game where I'm just rewatching it on Monday and I'm just like, wait, how did the Colts win this game again? And so they easily could be 0-2-1. You nailed it with the protection issues. Matt Ryan doesn't look comfortable. You know, I think we've been spoiled with some of these Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady to be like, okay, guy's 37. Well, he still has a couple of years left in him. I mean, maybe not every quarterback. He does not look good at all. And so defensively, you know, I know they were fine last week, but they're going to play the most vanilla scheme in the NFL, and their talent's just not that great really on either side of the ball when you look at it. So listen, if they get Darius Leonard back, if they figure some things out, I'm not gonna rule them out because the AFC is not great, but I don't know how anyone could be like, you know, how a start could be any more discouraging than what we've seen from the Colts through the first 3 weeks of the season. I think what adds on to it is just like, it's not like this isn't a young team where you're like, all right, they're taking their lumps and man, they bring these guys back next year. No, this is like, they just feel sort of stuck to me. I thought they were a low ceiling, high floor team coming into the year. And now I feel like they're a low ceiling, low floor team where like it could really go south for them here at some point.
Yeah. I mean, and I think the tough part for them is that, yes, Tennessee has struggled. They don't look very good, which is great for the Colts. You think, okay, well, we are the best positioned team to take advantage of that. But now the Jaguars might be a thing. And if the Jaguars are a thing this year, suddenly they look better than the Colts. They just shut out the Colts in week two. And that was with no Michael Pittman, with no Darius Leonard, or no Shaq Leonard, excuse me. But I would say that that's still a relatively scary proposition. If the Jaguars are good, I don't know that the Colts are a better team right now, given how they've played, not just in that one game, but through the first 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I'm interested to see how that game against the Titans plays out. Like, I feel like the Titans have issues, but at least have, you know, I have more faith that the Titans are going to be sort of, you know, competitive on a weekly basis and not have as low of a floor. I could end up being wrong about that, but, you know, just watching them, I feel better that they're sort of making the most of the situation they're in. Whereas I watch the Colts and I'm just like, did this team practice this week? Like, did these guys just meet each other before the game? And then you just look at some of the gaping holes at some of their premium positions. It's really concerning.
A man who does not just show up not having practiced all week, a man who shows up prepared, a man who shows up ready to do his job at a high level each and every time he's on the podcast, is The Ringer, Shil Kapadia. Shil, where can people check out more of your work this season?
Yeah, I feel like I already gave out all the plugs. So yeah, those shows are on the Ringer NFL feed. A Monday night one called Extra Point Taken, a Thursday one called The Scramble. So those are on the Ringer NFL feed. If you want Eagles coverage, we've got the Ringer's Philly Special that we record twice a week. And then I write a weekly column, my picks against the spread, which is really just a bunch of league-wide thoughts in addition to the picks that publishes on the ringer.com every Thursday.
Tremendous. Well, Shil, you know it's always an honor and a privilege to have you on the show. So thanks so much for hopping on.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much to my guest, Shil Kapadia of The Ringer. Loved being on Shil's show. Of course, love having Shil on this show. Hope you guys are enjoying the NFL season. I have more stuff coming up on ESPN.com, of course. Check out ESPN Daily, where I was on last Sunday with Pablo Torre. I think we're coming back next week for a week 5. I can do math in my head correctly. Week 5 preview later upcoming next week. And also on Debatable, I believe this Monday morning. So hope you guys are enjoying the NFL season. Hope you guys are entertained. More football on the way next week.